I think it's interesting. I hope we can start on time every Sunday at 9:30. I really detest the situation where Sonny's trying to start the service and he has to fire a gun to get everybody's attention. So let's kind of watch that sort of thing. But this will be nice this morning. We'll have a full 45 minutes and quit at 10:15. So you can visit now, or you can visit after Bible study. There will be an additional 15 minutes there for you to visit. And so we ought to be able to get that cross connections taken care of. Okay, he's got some more now, I think. Anybody else need a handout? There's some back over here on this side. What the handout is a schedule for topics that we're going to talk about in this class. This class is about the Great Flood. A very controversial topic in theology and in the general public's view. But it shouldn't be controversial to us. If you believe in the Bible, then you believe that there was a flood in Noah's time. And many of you believe it on that basis. And I admit that's belief by faith is the best kind. And so we trust that it did happen exactly the way it's described in the Bible. And you'll find that description in chapters 6, 7, 8, and 9 of Genesis. And I put at the top of your list here, please read that whole story. We're not going to study it right away. We will later on next month. But I want you to read that so that you know exactly what's there this month, so that when we get to it, it will be familiar to you. Read it in anybody's version that you want to. We're going to look at it in the NIV, the New International Version. But any version will work. So read those four chapters. The whole story is there. The first 11 chapters of Genesis are the ancient history of the Bible. And it's more ancient, I think, than we ever realized. It goes way, way back. When you get to the 12th chapter, then you have sort of intermediate ancient history, starting with Abraham, and we know pretty well when Abraham lived. But we have to infer when Noah lived. And so we'll talk about that in the course of the class. But today we're just going to look at some basic information about, did this really happen? A flood that covered the entire earth and killed everybody there, all of the animals that lived on the ground, didn't kill all the fish in the sea, but it killed all of the air-breathing animals on the earth, including all of the humans, except for those that were in a great big boat that rode the storm out for a year and then disembarked and repopulated the earth. You really believe that? A lot of people look at that story and say, that's just not even credible. And so if you talk to biologists, if you talk to scientists, if you talk to maybe even your neighbors, people that are reasonably intelligent, most of them will say that's just not likely that that ever happened. But surprise, I'm going to give you some information that you can give to the unbeliever that is very difficult to disprove. In fact, I think it's very solid evidence that this really did happen. It's kind of interesting that in our day and age, we're talking about, I've been watching the NASA TV. That's one of my favorite stations, is NASA television. On the cable, if you don't have that. You may not have NASA, but talking about going to Mars. You hear that story? They're building a spaceship now that will put us back on the moon and ultimately take us to Mars. And they've been studying Mars with probes, robot probes that they've sent there looking at the geology and the weather and everything. They've come to the conclusion that Mars was once covered with water. Where did all that water go? Well, now they've found that a lot of it's permafrost underneath the ground. So anyway, scientists readily believe a story like that about Mars, but they don't believe it about the Earth. So they really aren't so sure as they may, and smug in their beliefs as they may appear. Okay, we're talking about today about the discovery of Noah's Ark. You know when it was discovered? Before most of you all were born in modern times. I was a graduate student at the University of Wisconsin in 1960 when the picture came out in Life magazine. Where were you in 1960? Those of you who were alive then, did you notice that picture? Did you? It wasn't on the cover, it was in the back of of Life magazine, but it said, could this be Noah's Ark? And of course, who else's Ark could it be if it's a real Ark, okay? So we're going to look at that today. I'll give you some references as we go along. There's a recent book by David Deal called Noah's Ark, The Evidence, which gives a lot of the things that I'm going to talk about. I think this book's still in print. You may can get this book at Barnes & Noble or somewhere like that. There's an older book called Noah's Ark Discovered. And that one came out back in the 80s sometime, and I've had this copy for quite a while. There's a third big bound book, a large book by David Fassold that you may can find on eBay or somewhere or in a used bookstore. That's an interesting book too, because David Fassold was a marine archaeologist, and he's the authority about this sort of thing, and his concern about it is really very, very interesting. He was convinced when he first stood on the site, this was a boat. He knows boats, and so that's an interesting story in itself. So there's several published books about the subject, and what we're going to look at today is where it is and how they found it. And in a couple of weeks, we'll talk about this guy, Ron Wyatt, who wrote the book about it. And he's the Indiana Jones type. You can see his picture on the cover of the book. He's got his fedora pulled down over his eyes, and he's sort of like Indiana Jones. And he went through some of the same kinds of intrigue, and there were people shooting at him and robbing him and holding him up. So anyway, he had all kinds of struggle getting his story done. But he survived until the year, I think he died in the year 2000. We went to see him when he spoke at Humble in about 1998. Listened to his talk, and he's a very interesting guy. But his book is full of all sorts of digressions that makes it hard to read. So anyway, you take your chances as you read these things. But you have to, what is it like eating? I heard this the other day, like eating fish. You got to throw away the bones and keep the meat. All right, so that's where we're going. Today we're going to look at the discovery, and I'll show you the picture that was in Life magazine. We'll look at the site when men went there to look at it, and we'll see what the problems are. And then next week we'll go into a very detailed presentation about how big the ark is. We got to establish that first off. And then, as you can see in the list of things that you have that we're going to talk about, we'll look at Ron Wyatt's explorations. His name is Ronald Eldon Wyatt. Anybody named Eldon or Elton, attracts my attention. And so so we'll spend some time looking at what he said. And then November 2nd is the one that really intrigues me. I think from what we know about the ark, we can put together how it was constructed and its design. Then we'll talk about the flood story in the Bible. And the curious fact is that that's not the only flood story that's around. As you might expect, if all humanity descended from Noah and his family, all humanity has a flood story. All the nations of the earth, essentially. American Indians, the South American Indians, the Chinese, the Egyptians, everybody has a variation on this basic story about the flood. And it all includes many of the very basic elements. God was angry with the wickedness of men and destroyed men on the earth and had this one man build a ship and take the animals on board to repopulate the earth after the flood. So that in itself is a very striking piece of information. So we'll talk about that. We'll talk then about the theoretical aspects of it. Can you carry all the animals in the ark? When did it happen? That's a very interesting story. There's some surprises here. And that everybody, for a flawed reason, believes that it occurred between 3 and 4,000 B.C., but that's not the case, as we'll demonstrate. And then we'll talk about some science at the end, about what this does to the theory of evolution, because your kids in school get all of this information that misleads them, and so we'll have to handle that as we go. So before we begin the PowerPoint presentation, I want to have a short prayer, would you please? Our Father in heaven, we in this class embark upon a study of your word, specifically about the time when Noah built his great ship. And we believe that story because it's in your word, and your word has an excellent track record of always being true. But we live in a world that doesn't believe. So help us to absorb this information. There's plenty of evidence. Help me to present it properly, that we might all appreciate it and use it as we talk to people who are unbelieving, so that they too may come to trust your word, to know that it's true, and to realize the importance of building a relationship with you, which is just what Noah did so many long years ago. Help us in our study, we pray in Jesus' name. Amen. All right, let me get all my equipment straight here. Well, I know he gave me a, there it is. What did I do with it? It's in the other pocket. Now, where would you look for the remains of Noah's Ark, if there are any remains? And of course, that comes from looking at Genesis chapter 8. You'll read this when you go through. As the water went down after the flood was on its way out, the water receded steadily from the earth. At the end of the 150 days, the water had gone down. And on the 17th day of the 7th month, okay, we're gonna look at a calendar later on that tells you, so don't worry about it now, but we're looking at a long time after the 40 days and 40 nights of rain. On the 17th day of the 7th month, the ark came to rest on the mountains of Ararat. The word on has several meanings in the Hebrew. It could mean before the mountains of Ararat or near the mountains of Ararat. The waters continued to recede until the 10th month, and on the first day of the 10th month, the tops of the mountains became visible. How is it that the ark could come to rest before the mountains protruded from the water. Well, not only the draft of the ark in the water, and we'll talk about how big it was and all, but it's resting on its anchors. It's got anchors. We're going to talk about those anchors. They've been found. There's a dozen or more. Huge blocks of granite with a hole near one end, and a rope could go through it, and they can lower that all the way to the ground. And so they can rest. The ark comes to rest. That's a nautical term, really, when it sets its anchor. And so that's something else we'll look for later on. And then the mountain, see, it's resting somewhere besides on the top of a mountain. What would be the tallest mountain in the area? Well, that's Mount Ararat. And the interesting thing is that this has been known for 58 years, where this thing is, when it was published in Life magazine, and yet we still have people mounting these studies, going to go climb Mount Ararat and look for the ark on the top of the mountain. Have you run into any of those? An astronaut, James Irwin, spent a lot of time before he died looking for the ark on Mount Ararat. And you'll see it in the news every now and then, people going there to look. Well, the ark's already been found. Why do they want to find it on Mount Ararat? They didn't read what was in the Bible to start with. But I suspect that they enjoy putting together these big groupings of money and people and mounting a mountain climbing expedition and having a lot of fun. I don't know whether they really expect to find the ark there or not. But be that as it may, the ark's already been found. Okay. So where is Ararat? On this map, the red arrow points to Mount Ararat. You'll notice that it's in the far east of Turkey. Anatolia is another name, an older name for Turkey. Incidentally, we were talking about anchors a while ago. One of the ark's anchors was found in the city of Ankara. Do you ever wonder where that name came from? Now, scientists, people, unbelievers, have tried to think up another way for Ankara to get its name. But one of these anchors we'll show you in a few weeks was found there. And so it seems the ark traveled in its final days and months across from the west to the east and wound up near Mount Ararat in the far east. Now look, it's very close to the border with Iran and Armenia. To the south is Iraq. To the north is a place that's been in the news recently, Georgia. The area including Mount Ararat in Turkey, the northern part of Iran and Iraq, Armenia, is a region that is an ethnic region where the people who live there are largely Kurds. You've heard about the Kurds in northern Iraq a lot. A very tenacious people. They want to be a country of their own, and they would like to establish their own nation, and so they have problems with the governments in which they reside. And by all things fair, that there ought to be a Kurdistan or something like that in this region, but it never came to be. So that's Turkey. And we got to go right to the border with Iran to see this. Now what happened was that late 1950s, the Turkish government set out to map the terrain in eastern Turkey because it's very mountainous. So they wanted to get aerial photographs, stereo photographs, which was the most recent thing then, so they could see the mountains in three dimensions and map all of that area in case there was an invasion from Russia. That's what they were really worried about. So they flew planes back and forth over this area and got lots and lots of pictures. And one of the officers was studying these pictures when they discovered the ark. Now here's Mount Ararat. you can see what the area looks like. Mount Ararat is covered in snow year-round, and so it's very hard to study. There have been years when it was warm enough that most of the snow melted, and so the ARC searchers on Mount Ararat hope to photograph it someday when the snow's gone, but now they're usually looking for something buried in the snow. Well, that's not an easy task either. So here's the picture that was in Life magazine. In this picture, north is to the bottom and south is to the top. We'll look at that orientation. And you can read there what happened. The Turkish army officer was surprised to see the outline of a large ship. Now, this picture is taken at 10,000 feet. And the object is over 500 feet long. So we're going to come back to that at the end of the class. The photo appeared in Life magazine September 5th, 1960. And if you're like me and you have stacks of magazines all around your office, you might go back and dig through and find Life magazine in 1960. It's in most libraries. You can go to the library, and if they don't have the magazines there anymore, they have the microfiche projector thing, so that you can look at it and verify it. I'm going to show you the pictures that were in the magazine as we go along here. Now, the thing is in a lava flow coming down. All of the mountains in this region, incidentally, are volcanic. And so the soil is very volcanic soil. It's pretty rich. The elevation is pretty high. Incidentally, this object is above 6,000 feet in the mountains. So it's not close to sea level. And if there were uplift to bring it up to 6,000 feet, you would expect that in tectonic-type mountains, where like the Himalayas, where the folding of the earth has brought the mountains up. But this is in volcanic mountains. So if the volcanoes are active, they bury it. It appeared in this gorge where this mud and lava flow is in the mid-40s. And the locals who herd sheep in the area said they had an earthquake in 1948. They had three earthquakes in a row in a matter of days. And after the third earthquake, the thing appeared where they had been grazing sheep. And it had evidently been buried up until that time. It wasn't present to their it wasn't visible to them until after an earthquake. Now, this region is prone to earthquakes. Every now and then, every few years, we hear of a massive earthquake in Turkey. It sits on a large fault that runs straight across Turkey in the northern part of it. And so earthquakes have happened since it was discovered, and earthquakes have kind of removed some of the material around the ark so that it can be studied, and we'll look at that in a minute. So soldiers were sent to investigate the site. Turkish army soldiers went along with an American and an expedition of several people who viewed the site. And you can see the soldiers in the foreground are standing up on a ledge above this gorge. And the ark is in the distance in the right. It's not intact anymore. In other words, that's one of the problems with the people that are hunting the ark. They want to see the ark the way Noah built it. But we're not going to see Noah's Ark pristine. We're going to see it partially decayed. But there's a lot of it still left, as we'll see later on. And it doesn't look so big until you realize that's a half mile away. It's 500 feet long. I would like for you to get out and step off 500 feet in your street in front of your house sometime and see how long that is. How long are city blocks? Well, if they're a tenth of a mile long, like a lot of them are laid out, we're talking about something 500 feet. And more than a block long. We'll look at that next week. So they spent 2 days there. And they said, well, it doesn't look like it's a natural formation. It's not part of the terrain. And they weren't allowed to dig, but they set off a charge to the right side over there on the ark, as you're looking at it now, blew away part of the wall of it, and so it's just rock and dirt. So Life magazine took and ran with that and said, well, it's not Noah's Ark, really. It's just some sort of a strange natural geological formation. But something like it's never been seen anywhere else in the world. So you can take that. You can believe Life magazine if you want to, but I don't. All right, here it is up close. You're standing at the stern. What's the stern? We've got to use nautical terms here. What's the bow of the boat? That bow's at the front, and the stern is where? At the rear. Okay. And it's kind of squared off at the rear, you can see. The water, it's sloping down toward the stern, and the water of storms and all runs off here. And so the stern has been eroded faster than the rest of the boat. But you can see the striations in the wall where there are the remains of rib timbers. Now, it's all fossilized. That is, it's all of the wood has been turned to stone. How quickly can that happen? Can you, if you take a fence post and go bury it in the mud in your backyard, how quickly does it turn to stone? It generally gets eaten by the termites and there's nothing left afterwards. But this is fossilized. Fossilized wood. And it, and so if you take a chunk of it and analyze it, it's high in carbon content. That's been done. Now, the Turkish government has never allowed anybody to excavate here. However, they did allow Ron Wyatt to take a piece that was lying on the surface and go analyze it. It was sitting near the surface. They dug it up, and he took it, cut it up, and analyzed it for its atomic content. It's about 5% carbon, which is high. Rocks don't come at 5% carbon. The dirt and the rocks in the area are less than 1% carbon. So it's got a high carbon content, suggesting it was life, probably wood. The wood does not show any growth rings, which would make it easy to say it's petrified wood. If you've got a chunk of petrified wood at home, you know how that works. So, but that's what we have, just generally an outline. Apparently, the central part of the ark, there's kind of a hump there, and there's a rock at the top. You see that rock? The ark is hung up on, it would have slid on down the mountainside, except it's hung up on a piece of bedrock at that point. So it's just sitting there. It's been exposed for 58 years. It's been weathering all this time. And so I have some pictures of it. From the early days, and we can compare that with the way it looks now, and you can see that it's slowly disintegrating in the weather. Now, you can go visit Noah's Ark. The Turkish government suspended tourist visits to the Ark in the mid-1990s because of the Kurds who were rebelling against the Turkish government at that point, and it was dangerous to go in, so they didn't allow visitors then. But the Turkish government recognizes the site as Noah's Ark, and they built a visitor center there that has recently been reopened, and now you can, for a few thousand dollars, I guess you can go arrange a tour and go back and see it. They built a four-lane highway to the site so that you can get there now with some help. So you can see there are a lot of mountains in that region where Noah's Ark is. Now this is a picture, if you look in the lower right-hand corner, from Google Earth. Anybody have Google Earth on your computer? If you don't, you can download it for free. And then you can look at any place on Earth from aerial photos, from satellite photos. And in many interesting places like this, you can get pictures from ground level. So we'll see. Now you see the yellow pin in the middle of the picture? That's the marker that they put in the program so that you can mark spots like this and go back to them very readily when you want to go look at it again. Google Earth. Now, this is the site from 50 miles, 47 miles above. You can now see at the very top center up there is where Mount Ararat is. It extends down toward Noah's Ark quite a distance. It's a very large mountain, and at the time this picture was made, there wasn't a whole lot of snow on the top of it. And Noah's Ark's down near the Iranian border. It's on a lesser mountain, but it's near the top of a mountain, as we'll see. So here's the site. Looking at it from above, it looks kind of flat. But with Google Earth, you can pull it over to one side and look at the a profile of it to some extent. And I have it marked in my computer. Here's the bow, there's the stern, and you can see this part of it right here sticks up quite a bit because it's casting a shadow. These little markers here are where there are pictures taken from the ground, and some of them you can load them into your computer and look at it from ground level. There's a control mechanism in the upper right-hand corner of Google Earth, and it tells you which way you're going. You can work on it. You can use it kind of like a controller for a game program, a toggle switch. And so you can move it around and center it in your screen. Now, it's very close to a little village here called Uzungili. Uzungili sits on a ledge, a rise above this gorge. You can see the difference in the material flowing down the gorge. It's flowing to the north off of a high mountain area way down here near the floor. And a very interesting thing that was pointed out in David Deal's book, when they've studied the area here close to the ark along this ridge, there are thousands of burial sites there. People flock to that region to be their final resting place. I don't know, why would anyone do that? Why would they want to be buried where their ancestors are buried? That's right, it's a sacred place to the ancients. And there are literally thousands of graves along this ridge here. So the ancients were quite clear that this is Noah's Ark, and we'll see lots of evidence of that. The moderns aren't so clear. Now, with Google Earth, you can measure the distance of any object that shows up in the photograph. And so you can put markers at the bow and at the stern, and then it will tell you how big, how long that line is in feet or miles or meters or whatever length you want, inches if you want it in inches. It's a big number. It's 515 feet long. So a lot of the critics looked at that and said, it's too big. It's not Noah's Ark. But my question is, whose ark is it if it's not Noah's Ark? How do we know how long the ark should be? Well, you can look in your Bible and it tells you how long it is, can't you? Genesis 6, verses 14 to 16. So make yourself an ark of cypress wood. This is the NIV, and we don't know what kind of wood it was made out of. Cypress? Why cypress? It's just a guess. Nobody knows what kind of wood grew in the antediluvian world. I don't know where to get gopher wood. That's what the King James Version said. And that was a misunderstanding, apparently, of a word called cofer instead of gopher. Cofer means pitched wood, wood covered with bitumen. And, of course, we'll see later on in the instructions that that's what he was instructed to do. Make rooms in it and coat it with pitch inside and out. But it's made out of wood, some kind of wood. This is how you are to build it. The ark is to be 450 feet long, 75 feet wide, and 45 feet high. And this ark is 515 feet long. Well, where did we go wrong? How did Moses know to write it in feet? He was so smart, yeah. It doesn't say feet, does it? Okay, we'll talk about that next week. You can ferret that out in your Bible. If you look at the footnote, what does it say? 300 cubits long, okay? So how long it's supposed to be depends upon how long a cubit is. All right, so we'll talk about that next week. We don't have time to discuss that this morning. We're going to spend the whole class next week figuring out how big it's supposed to be. And we can make an argument strictly from science that tells us exactly what the length of the ark ought to be. Guess what? 515 feet's right. Okay, if you aren't back to hear that next week, then you know what the answer is today. But the cubit... This 450 feet long boat, the writers, the translators of the NIV said, okay, in Israel, since the time of David, the cubit has been 18 inches long. And that assumes a cubit that's a foot and a half long, 18 inches. But we'll show you next week that the cubit when the ark was built, and the cubit in the time of Moses was a longer cubit. So we'll, and I'm going to show you with archaeology next week exactly how long it ought to be. Make a roof for it, finish the ark to within 18 inches of the top, and that's probably accurate translation, although it's a cubit from the top, not 18 inches. And so we'll look at the structure of it as we go along. We have to develop this thing slowly. But put a door in the side of the ark. Where are you going to put the door in the side of a boat? Near the top or near the bottom? Why? So the water won't leak through the door. Yeah, right. So the door is up near the roof of the ark on one side. Doesn't tell us how big the door is. Make lower, middle, and upper decks. So how many decks? Three decks plus storage in the bottom of the boat, right? So when we figure out the capacity of the ark, we'll have some interesting information. All right, there it is. When the light is just right, you can see all of the details. Now this is what's visible on the surface. You can see the periodic wood supports on the side. They go over there too. There are things that occur at regular intervals in the middle here as well. here's the rock on which it's hung up, and it distorts it quite a bit in the middle. The patterns that we'll see later on are distorted here. And up there is the bow of the boat. And it's pointed at the front end, as we saw, squared off at the back, like a motorboat. What kind of motor did it have? Didn't have a motor. It's got to be made in such a way that it can float in heavy seas and be oriented in the seas. In the seas, you want to orient the boat so that it points where? Toward the wind and the waves, across the waves, right? What happens if it turns sideways in the waves? It gets tossed over. But it's made in such a way that it would, even if heavy seas tended to tilt it way over, it would probably right itself properly. What do you need in order to keep it floating upright? Well, you have to put some kind of ballast in the very bottom of the boat, is the way that's usually done. So we can't excavate it. So how are we going to study what it's like inside? Two or three things have been done, and some are non-destructive testing. Others, they did. The Turkish government did allow them to make some drill holes down into it. And what would you expect them to find when they do that? Well, what they found was rock and dirt. I mean, it is rock now. Didn't used to be. It used to be wood, but the wood's turned to rock. And incidentally, to get your wood to turn into petrified wood, you do need to bury it in a lava flow, which is where this thing is. The other thing we'll see, Ron Wyatt dragged some instruments across the top of it here that showed him what was down below. What kind of instruments can you use to determine what's under your feet? They didn't allow them to set off sonic systems like they use for oil exploration, and you don't need that. We're talking about a matter of meters here on the surface. So they use radar. A form of radar dragged across the top gives you a return of what's buried underneath. And the other thing they used was a magnetic device to detect metal, a frequency device that allowed them to detect metal in the ship, and the ship is full of iron. And the archaeologists look at that and say, hey, that's not fair. The Iron Age didn't start until 1,000 years B.C. How can you have iron in something that's many thousand years older than that? But if you read your Bible, you know that Moses told us a man named Tubal-Cain was skilled in doing what? Iron and metals, metalworking. People who lived before the flood lived very long lives, hundreds of years. If you had several hundred years to live, you could do all sorts of experimentation, couldn't you, with your natural surroundings, and you'd learn a whole lot if you didn't start forgetting everything by the time you were 60. Like the situation is now, they could remember, and they could study things in the long term, and so they learned all of these cycles. Now, they lived in a world that was different from our world, and we'll have to ferret that out as we go along. The world before the flood was not a world of summer and winter. The world before the flood was like a greenhouse. Uniform temperatures. How do we know that? Well, one hint is that Adam and Eve didn't have any clothes at first, did they? God clothed them when they left the garden, but they lived in a world that was essentially the same temperature all the time. Could the world be that way? Well, the scientists are looking at that very carefully right now because of the possibility that the Earth's growing warmer. But we live in a world where the temperature oscillates summer and winter, and apparently that wasn't the case then. So that makes a difference too, and that is a clue that will help us eventually figure out exactly when all of this took place. All right. There it sits. 500 feet. And you realize, when you try to put that in a city block, you see, that's a big ship. We'll talk about its size next week. Any of you have any questions that occur to you at the moment? It's 10:15. Yes? And it looks to be sort of spread out in the middle. Now you have to realize it's run up against that rock. And also, it may be, as it's collapsed, it may have splayed open. So that its width is more than the prescribed width in the Bible. We'll talk about that as we look at its structure. But that's a good question, because it looks bigger in the middle than it does at either end. I think the width of it at this end down here tells you something about its structure. And I think my own personal preference is for a rectangular boat with a point at one end. And I've made a model. We'll look at the model later on. Yes? The carbon in the rock is so old that it doesn't show any radioactivity. They can't do carbon dating with it because it predates almost everything that we date with carbon dating. Carbon dating, in theory, ought to be good to 50,000 years, but it isn't in this case. And I don't think they've even looked to see what the carbon dating was on this. It's not reliable because the Earth changed at the time, and the weather was different, and the formation. Carbon dating is only good as long as the atmosphere is in equilibrium with the radiation coming from outer space, which turns nitrogen into carbon-14, which decays into carbon-12, or decays into normal nitrogen, I guess. I have to look at that. But anyway, if the world was warm and didn't have the atmosphere that it has now, we wouldn't know what to make of the carbon dating. So it isn't carbon dated, to answer your question. Anything else? We'll get to a lot of things like this. We have time to look specifically until the end of November. We'll look specifically at all of these questions, and I'm going to try to give you material that you can use for someone who's an unbeliever. Thank you very much. We'll start again next week.